Yes, it's the Breakfast Club signature. You know it, all America knows it. And with it, ABC proudly brings you, in part transcribed, the Don McNeil story, celebrating the 20th anniversary of Smiles Before Breakfast. 20 years of a man who grew with radio, made himself a part of radio, and a part of America's heart. This, then, is the Don McNeil story. And the man to tell it to you, our narrator, host, and proper good fellow, is ABC's star, Dennis James.
Thank you. Good evening, friends. Yes, it's a story, and a wonderful story it is, too. Think about it. What makes a fellow surge to the top in this business we call show business? Go to the top and stay there for 20 years. Believe me, this is a secret we'd all like to know. And that's what this man did. You see, he wrote a letter back in 1933. It said, "Dear Broadcasting Company, I have done so-and-so since I was in college in 1928. Enclosed, please find sample scripts. May I have a job with you in Chicago?" And it was signed, Don McNeil. So the young man from Sheboygan, Wisconsin, got the job. 20 years ago. Yes, he's been at it ever since. 20 full years filled with the fun, the laughter, the joy, and the sadness that adds up to millions of people who have known his voice and sensed his personality. Been made to understand each other better. Made to understand themselves better. Because of him. Because of the man whose story we tell tonight, Don McNeil. So many things have happened and so many people are involved that in trying to condense this 20 years into a few moments for you, it leaves us wondering exactly where to begin. How has he affected the lives of others? What's there to select? Perhaps in the hills of New England, where the Connecticut River winds its curving way to the sea, on the edge of a city which shall be nameless here, is an old brick building. Iron fire escapes, where men and women live out the tag ends of their lives. At a place like this, it's easy to feel unwanted. It's easy to feel unsung. In a place where even kindness is mechanical, the days are routine, the nights are just lonely dark.
Very quiet tonight, ain't you, Ephraim?
Got nothing to say.
Kind of pleasant, sitting here. Rocking on the porch on a summer night.
Rockers squeak.
Always have. 10 years I've been here.
You like it, Essie. I don't have to.
What's wrong with it, Ephraim?
They call it a home. With a young pipsqueak of a so-called doctor. Still wet behind the ears. Always listening to folks' hearts. Tapping their knees.
What's wrong with that? They want us to stay well.
Don't know enough. I'm as smart as that cub is.
I think, Ed, you're just, well, lonesome tonight, ain't you?
Mary?
I guess maybe you should have been here, let me see, 7 years ago, come October. You wouldn't be quite so sour, Ephraim.
How come?
We had a sunshine shower back then.
What's that?
Fella on the radio.
One of them higher folks fellas. Can't stand them.
This fella you could. Seems like back then somebody wrote to this boy. Neil McNeil, the boy, that is. And told him our home was kind of, well, lonesome. So he up and talked about us on his radio program in the morning. Told people everywhere that all they had to do was to write us oldsters here, and they'd be bringing us a shower of sunshine. Well, Ed, the letters came. And some of them are still coming. I've been writing to folks I've never seen all these years. And every morning I listen to Mr. McNeil on his Breakfast Club, and doggone it, I don't care if the rockers do squeak, and the nurse is fresh like, and the doctor is snoopy. I got friends on account of Don McNeil, and I'm a nicer person because of, well, because of him.
I'm a nicer person because of him. Was anything better ever said or even thought of a human being? Personally, I doubt it. But understand this, where Don is concerned, that it takes a good man, a simple man, to reach people, to touch their hearts with the simplicity of the truth. This Don McNeil has done these 20 years with music and smiles and the touch of truth. In the country, the villages, big cities, everywhere, problems seemed solvable, grief seemed bearable, strain seemed endurable because of a word and a smile like this in the morning.
I won't get up. I won't.
Up and at him, Maisie. There's rent to pay.
I'll get up and they'll be at me.
Oh, stop it.
Look, don't you sit there putting on your stockings and talking like that. You don't have to face 40-odd brats every working day and wonder if you'll live through it until 3 o'clock.
No, I don't.
Well, you just try it sometime. Just you try it.
I wish I could.
Look at me. The perfect example. School teacher, now and forever. Target for everything from the principal's temper to the big boy's border races.
Oh, now stop it, Maisie. You're not kidding me for 1 minute, and you know it. You love to tease.
I think.
Yeah, I saw your face yesterday morning when that Breakfast Club fella read that poem about teaching.
You believed every word of it.
Well, that's up.
Smart girl, aren't you, Lucy?
Smart enough to know that all your griping doesn't mean a thing.
Well, it might have. A week ago.
Oh?
Mm-hmm. You ready for Confessions of a School Teacher?
Shoot.
Well, I listened to that poem and the way McNeil read it. And I knew he was speaking for me. Well, me and an awful lot of girls like me. You know, he put into words what we feel. And, well, mostly we're ashamed to speak. And if he can do that for as many people as I think he can, well, then he's got a right to be on the air forever.
These incidents have been a sampling of what's been going on for 20 years, a way of people to find words they couldn't speak for themselves, to a man who wakes them up with a smile and sends them about their daily business with a will to be of goodwill. Now, what about this man himself? Sure, he's a Midwesterner with a lovely wife, a fine family. He grew up in Wisconsin, went to school, did all the things that you and I did. But still, what about him? What's he like to work with? Who are his colleagues, his co-workers? Well, out in Hollywood this minute are three young people whose names you know. Two girls and a guy who have worked with Don across a span of years from 1939 to 1949. One of them is Nancy Martin, the gal who sang with Don and all the Breakfast Club family from 39 right through 49. The other two are Evelyn Lynn and Jack Owens. And all three right now are having a reunion of their own at ABC in California. So let's hear from them, shall we? Go ahead, Nancy, Evelyn, Jack, in Hollywood.
Happy anniversary, Don. This is Jack from Hollywood, and I've got several of your friends that are here with me waiting to add their voice in this happy occasion. I've got Evelyn Lynn here from Texas, Nancy Martin from West Virginia, Jack Rose, if you listen real carefully, Jack Rose, who played in the original Breakfast Club Orchestra, on guitar, and remember when I joined the Breakfast Club in April 1934, then I left in 36, and I came out to Hollywood to become a movie star, but I found out it was the year for Robert Taylor, and then I rejoined you in 44, and now I'm back out here with my own show, but I'll never forget the one song in 1944 that I introduced on the Breakfast Club. You remember this one? How soon
together,
doesn't it?
About 3 blocks apart.
That's right. Well, Nancy, I know you're famous for a lot of songs from Breakfast Club, like Blue Tail Fly. What was your favorite?
Well, I think that the favorite of most people was Little Man You've Had Busy Days.
Oh, yeah. Well, sing a little bit of that, will you?
I think the first time I ever sang it was in your hometown on a personal appearance. Wichita.
Oh, good.
Little man, you're crying. I know why you're blue. Someone took your kitty car away. But you'd better go to sleep now. The little man had a busy day.
Oh, that's
wonderful.
Your little man turned out to be a little girl, though, didn't it?
Yes, and I'm still waiting for that song you're going to write for Sandy.
That's right, for Sandy. I'm glad you remind me. I'll write it.
All right.
Evelyn Lynn.
Yes, sir.
Bride of Dallas, Texas.
Oh, thank you.
Just pretty as ever.
You know, I was just thinking back to 1939, December, that first morning on the program. Oh, I was so frightened, and everyone was teasing me about being from Texas.
Yeah.
It's such fun.
Yeah, you've lost all your Texas accent, though.
Yeah, I will
It's still there. Say, listen, Evelyn, I know that Don and everybody would like to hear the thing that you're real famous from the Breakfast Club.
And I'd like to do it, too.
Would you? Sure. All right, go ahead.
Dear Diary, for this very wonderful occasion, I have written a poem. 30 days have September, April, June, and November. All the rest have 31. Except the Breakfast Club, and it has 20 years.
Oh, happy anniversary, Don.
Happy anniversary.
Oh, say, in thinking of a song that we could all sing together, we couldn't get around this one because this is a song that Don wrote with the late Walter Blaufuss.
And Uncle Will Rossiter published it.
Uncle Will published it. So we got out My Cathedral. We've got a trio. We've got Rex Corey and Bobby Hammock and all the boys to play for it. So here's My Cathedral.
Years not only mean a lot of time, but a lot of faces. Still, some of the originals, too, to be exact, are with Don today, along with Cliff Peterson, the producer, and Fran Allison, and Sam Cowley, and Aunt Fanny, and Sam, whose names are now bywords in morning radio. The originals are pianist Bill Krenz and conductor Ed Ballantyne. Well, they're in Chicago now, making ready for tomorrow's celebration, the 20-year birthday party of the show and of Don McNeil. And with them are two names. New as far as the Breakfast Club is concerned, of course, but veteran show people beyond a doubt. Peggy Taylor and Johnny Desmond. So come on in, all of you, the ABC gang in Chicago.
Hi there, this is Johnny Desmond in Chicago with some of the Breakfast Club gang gathered all around. And you know, when I reminisce about the Breakfast Club and what it means to me, my thoughts go back to my boyhood days when I worked in my dad's grocery store in Detroit. Every morning, I used to turn on the little radio I had behind the counter, and I'd listen to Don and all the gang. And, the Breakfast Club came right between sweeping out and sacking the potatoes. I remember my dad saying to me one day, "Hey, look, Joan, figure me. You listen close to this fella, Donnie McNeil. You know, he's just like in the vegetable business. He's a bigger potato. You know how it is. When you sack up the potatoes, the bigger potatoes always come out on the top." Well, I want you to know that my dad was right. But little did I realize that 13 years later, I'd find myself joining Don McNeil and becoming a regular Breakfast Clubber myself. I guess I don't have to tell you how happy I am that I finally reached that goal. And the past 4 years of working with Don have really been great ones. Say, Peggy Taylor, you had a similar yen, didn't you?
Yes, I did, Johnny, but in a little different way. You see, out in California, my home, I was lucky enough to form a friendship with that wonderful singer, Dorothy Shay, the Park Avenue Hillbilly. She said, "Peg, staying to be a singer is real hard work. And then, if you get to be a good singer, well, then comes the real problem. Getting to sing where folks can hear you, lots of folks. Now, if you could only get on a big radio show like, like Don McNeil's Breakfast Club, it would be the greatest break a girl could ever ask for. Little did I realize that 2 years later, I'd be doing that very thing, getting to work alongside of Don, and I've always felt that I'll be indebted to Dorothy Shea for making the Breakfast Club my goal, too.
I know what you mean, Peggy, and, well, there's a couple of other breakfast lovers here, too, who know how much fun it is to sit around Don McNeil's breakfast table every morning.
Well, thank you, Mr. Desmond. That's just a beautiful
idea. Wait a minute, Aunt Fanny. Look, now, let Fran Allison speak for a minute, will you, please?
Well, yes, Aunt Fanny, I think that would be nice, because actually, I did precede you. I came to the Breakfast Club and joined Don McNeil in 1937. July of 1937.
Oh, the same year as I did. I was with the a trio called the Three Romeos.
Oh, yes, I remember.
We had a motto.
Yes?
Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Hold your nose, it's the Romeos.
Am I going to get a chance to talk or not?
Aunt Fanny, please, now.
Well, I want to say that, well, Fran was a nice girl, but as the singers come and go, she went, believe me. And it's been just wonderful to work with Mr. McNeil. Know his nice family and all the people that have come
Fanny,
and joined. Yes.
I know that, but we can't take up too much time here.
Of course, there's others who have sort of grown up with Mr. McNeil and the Breakfast Club, like Mr. Eddie Ballantyne, the orchestra leader, and Mr. Bill Krenz, the piano player. They was here at the beginning of the Breakfast Club. As a matter of fact, I hear tell that Mr. Krenz dates back to the beginning of most everything.
Well, Bill and I were around at the start, all right. I blowing up a storm on my trumpet, and Bill beating the ivories. We can look back to the first days of Breakfast Club in 1933, when Walter Bloffus was the conductor.
Say, Eddie, remember at Christmas time back in 34 and 35... there was a couple who played Mr. and Mrs. Santa Claus on our Christmas programs. I think they called themselves Toots and Chicky.
Yeah, boy. Good thing they changed that name, or we might never have gotten to know them as they are today. Fibber McGee and Molly. Gee, so many folks gathered around Don McNeil's breakfast table in those early days, like Ole Olson of Olson and Johnson. He was subbing for Don one summer, and he got the idea of having listeners send a card or letter to shut-ins, folks in hospitals or rest homes.
And Don, being a humanitarian he is, realized what a great idea it was, adopted it permanently for the program, and thus the sunshine shower was born.
Right. And prayer time. The Breakfast Club feature that more listeners praise than any other element in the show. Don got that idea during the war. Being a deeply religious man, he realized the need for prayers in times like those. He felt that folks wouldn't mind sharing a moment of prayer each morning, and so it has been since.
Wasn't it about 1936 that a singing group called the Escorts and Betty joined the Breakfast Club? That's when a certain Swede with a smorgasbord accent showed up.
Well, now, if you're talking about Cliff Peterson, Bill, that's me.
Yes, sir, that's me. Say, Eddie, you remember from the Swede Hearts of St. Paul?
Yeah.
You remember how that came about?
Well, I don't exactly remember, Cliff. Refresh my memory.
Well, Don came in that morning. He wanted something different on the show, so he says, well, we can take a number we got here and sing it and then break it up at the ends of the phrases and in yet the gag there, see. So he says, well, let's try it and see what happens. And he says, well, what do we call this thing? And I said, well, I don't know. And he says, well, how about the Sweethearts from St. Paul? And that's the way it happened.
That's right.
No, Mr. McNeil, he changed my name again here now. Now I'm Smorgasbord Peterson, the ring-tailed deuce, even a snood on the top. You can bet your life in that.
Yep, changes have come along in the Breakfast Club over the 20 years. But the man who runs the show, Don McNeil, hasn't changed. As a matter of fact, the man at the keyboard hasn't changed much either. Bill Krenz still sits there playing some of the tunes just like he did in the old days in ragtime style. And Bill's established as the king of ragtime.
I thank you.
Here's Bill playing his 20-year-old plus version of Maple Leaf Rag.
You played it like you did 20 years ago.
Well, thank you. Thank all of you in Chicago. You know, even Don takes a vacation once in a while, and so it follows, of course, that there have been stand-ins for Don. Men who know him, like him, men who know people as he knows them, and loves them as he does. First and foremost among these fellows is someone beloved by kids of all ages from the proverbial 6 to the just as proverbial 60. The one and only, the inimitable, Joe E. Brown.
Thanks, Dennis. Thanks very much indeed. You know, folks, when you stand in, as Dennis said, for anybody, you've got your work cut out for you. After all, the other fellow has his friends, and you've got to be exactly like him or so different that people won't mind. Usually, that is. So when I first went in for Don, I had plenty to worry about. Then it happened. By golly, it did. You know, I found out that Don's friends, millions of them, were such darn nice folks that so much of Don himself had rubbed off on them, sort of, that all they wanted to do was to be nice to me. It's a fact, so help me. It wasn't work at all. It was just plain wonderful fun, meeting them, talking to them, being friends with them on the air and in the studio. Now, you know, this proves something. It proves something mighty important. It proves that Don's been right. Right in his belief that everybody, people everywhere, are real folks. That there's something nice about everybody. That all that folks need is somebody to give them a little push. To remind them that they are nice. And that it's real easy to show it. Let me tell you something. You know, it takes a fine fella to do this. To do it in the right way. Need I say here that Don's exactly that kind of a fella? Of course not. You know it. Now, this summer, when Don goes off on his holiday, he's going to be stood in for by another young fellow who can tell a story at the drop of somebody's hat and who'll make that smile before breakfast as easy as anything. He's here tonight, and of course, you all know him. You've had him before and enjoyed him a great deal. Ladies and gentlemen, here's a funny guy, a funny-looking guy, my friend. No, don't laugh. Peter Donald.
Oh, thanks, Joe. I noticed you said that another young man's going to stand in front.
Well, I wanted to get myself some kind of a plug.
Oh, listen, you're always young. Well, I want to thank you for the send-off, Joe, and that terrific summary of Don's philosophy, because I feel the same way about it. It doesn't mean much effort, this business of being nice. Just takes a little extra thought, which we can all spare even in these troublesome times. It's just the other day, an Irish fella I know over on Third Avenue.
Yeah. Here it is, boy.
Well, here's what he said, Joe. He said about the times these days, he says, you know, Pete, he says, the Russians are in China, and the British are in Egypt, and the French are in Indochina, and the Chinese are in Korea. He says, that's the trouble with the world today. Nobody's home.
Oh, you fool.
Well, we can pick up a little philosophy out of that, too. But it's not a new idea, actually, any more than Don McNeil's approach to living is new. It goes back quite a ways, you know. Little simple things like love thy neighbor and do unto others if you just take the time. And now that we are being serious for a minute, let me say that I am not only happy, I am just doggone proud to be standing in for Don again this summer. It's one of the greatest gangs in the world, that McNeil family.
Yes, they are.
And that, of course, includes all the Breakfast Club listeners out there. Is that right, Joe?
You bet.
So until we all meet again on Breakfast Club, thanks to all of you, and Don, good luck.
One man could not be left out of any celebration here at ABC. One is truly part of the Don McNeil story, as he's everybody's boss in our network and everybody's friend. Here to add his own words to the tale we tell tonight is the president of the American Broadcasting Company, Robert E. Kempner.
Thank you, Dennis. We have said many times here at ABC that the responsibility which we feel comes with the name American Broadcasting Company is for our network to mean everything that is American to all of our listeners. I felt when the Old Blue Network became the American Broadcasting Company, and Don and the Breakfast Club were, of course, part and parcel of ABC, that with this program, particularly in Don, we were well on our way to fulfilling part of that responsibility. Don and the program do express America to Americans. The kindness, the feeling of good fellowship, the great causes which Don has embraced, the simple small goodness which has been performed, are all typical of our people's hearts. With this in mind, I can do no better, I am sure, than to thank Don for all he has accomplished for the millions of people, to congratulate him on these first 20 years, and to offer him my own and ABC's wishes for a long and increasingly beloved and brilliant future.
Thank you, Mr. Kinder. Memory Time, that portion of The Breakfast Club which is so completely Don McNeil. 20 years of Memory Time is filled with endless poems, oft-told stories, the expressions of people's hearts everywhere. Out of them all, here is one which grew out of the moment of silent prayer which belongs to Don McNeil, to the program, in fact, belongs to all of us. 5 simple verses. Live for peace. Hope for peace and pray for peace. And both of these are good. But have you ever really tried to live for peace? You could. If each and every one of us would love his neighbor well and trust his God with all his heart, and in his love would dwell and cease in ways both large and small to strive for power great, be just to rich and poor alike, and never stoop to hate. Be kind and thoughtful every day. Trust others as you would that they should always do to you. Thus, live for peace. You should. If homes and towns and cities large and lands from shore to shore would each live the golden rule, then wars would be no more. Don, this is your story, and we're all proud to offer you our hands in the deepest, sincerest friendship tonight.
You've been listening to the Don McNeil story, presented in part transcribed by ABC in honor of the 20th anniversary of The Breakfast Club and its famous and beloved host, Don McNeil. This program came to you from Hollywood, Chicago, and New York. This is ABC Radio Network.